Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host and friend. And we welcome our very good colleague on the struggling PRC economy, Ann Stephenson Yang, author of the new and I highly recommend Wild Ride for a sense of irony about where China's coming from and where it's going. However, now we turn to a headline in the FT that I asked Gordon's help with. Climate change. China and U.S. push each other on priorities for UN COP29 climate talks. Gordon, I remember you telling me something about climate talks in the beginning of the Biden administration, that it was useful to talk climate. But as I recall, there was something about the Biden administration saying that it wanted to be careful about opposing China on everything because they needed China's help on climate change. Do I remember that correctly?
You do, John. The Biden administration believes in general that the United States needs to find areas of cooperation with China. And climate change is one of those areas that the Biden administration has identified. The Chinese know that, and they take advantage of that perception in Washington.
Now we go to the troubles. This is a subhead in the Wall Street Journal in these last days. Economists say the government sector needs to step up and borrow more aggressively at a time of disinflationary pressure and faltering demand. And a very good evening to you. This is a complicated way of saying you've said something very simply. The housing's in trouble. It's a crater. Consumerism, not. And manufacturing slipping and unemployment climbing. So how would the government borrowing more aggressively help all that? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I think what's being asked of the government. So Chinese local governments are very highly indebted because of this property boom. And the national government, the central government is not really that highly indebted. So I think the idea is, well, you know, you do need this debt in order to help the local government. So central government, please take it on for us. But the fact is that the hole is just too deep to fill with debt or with anything else. And I think that it's just kind of a lost cause.
Gordon, you have a question for Ann.
And just a fundamental question. China does not have a federal system. It's a unitary government. And isn't the debt of provincial governments, local governments, isn't that really the debt of the Chinese government? Or has it been structured so that people who have provincial debt can't go after the central treasury?
Yeah, Gordon, the local debt, actually the central government has no obligation to pay for local debts that go bust. There is a general sort of wink and nod assumption in China that governments are always going to be bailed out. But I wouldn't take that too seriously because there has been this assumption that, you know, at first it was, oh, property will never die. Then it was a bond will never go bust. You know, the Chinese government will always step in and pay for bonds. Now it's governments will never go bust. And, you know, one by one, those things just happen.
Goldman Sachs, in this article about recommending that China's government step up and borrow more aggressively, Goldman Sachs says that although exports may provide a strong boost to GDP growth in China this year, we believe more fiscal easing is necessary to help secure the around 5%, it's a quote, full-year growth target. And my understanding is the fiscal easing, they've tried that, it doesn't work. Will they try it again? Do they keep going to the same idea even though there's no payoff?
Well, that has been the strategy over the last 15 years or so. The thing is that that each time they've stimulated, the bad debts and the bad assets simply grow. And so you've gotten to the point at which you'd need to put trillions into the Chinese economy in order to refill that debt gap. And it simply isn't possible because it would create a ton of inflation.
And Gordon, they need to go big or go home. Is that the aversion, or is there nothing to be done?
Well, first of all, I think there's nothing to be done. But people who are more optimistic than I am believe that, yes, with some fiscal stimulus, with some easing, they can get there. The problem is, as Ann says, that this has been tried in the past, and it just hasn't worked. And they don't really have any ideas to make it work. So it won't work if they try this again.
You have a question for Ann.
Ann, there have been reports that when China borrows and when it stimulates, it gets much less in output than it actually expends. Do you think that is the case? And if it is, then there must be some limit to how much China can borrow and can spend before the system just collapses or at least erodes because it's just not able to create GDP.
Yeah, that's right, Gordon, and that's why there's such a thing as a debt limit. But it's very fuzzy and hard for people to predict what that limit's going to be. But China has really reached that limit. So if you look at before 2009, China was getting sort of, I don't know what it actually was, but let's say 1 renminbi of growth for every, 1.5 renminbi that was put into the economy. But that number gradually got worse and worse until you had to put in like 7 or 8 renminbi in order to get one back. So that's why it's just kind of collapsed on itself.
The measure of the Chinese economy is that GDP number, that growth number. However, we don't have some other metrics that would help to understand where they are. We don't have an employment number. Is that correct, Anne? They stopped giving that out, or it's not trustworthy?
Well, they've never given it out. They had a survey-based number for youth unemployment. That's people who are 16 to 24 who are seeking a job. And that number got up over 20%, so they decided not to publish it anymore. The unemployment number generally is very, very unreliable. It's based on a certain number of people who are working, but it doesn't tell you how many people there are in the workforce or how many people are looking for work. And it's been, criticized for being a ridiculously unvolatile, stable number. I think the IMF had a paper on this about 10 years ago about how China's number never, ever fluctuates and everybody else's does.
Gordon, you have a question. We have a couple of minutes.
And these numbers are unreliable. Clearly, Beijing's leaders, do they know that this is unreliable? Are they being deceived by their own statistics?
No, I find that, there was a hope about, 5 to 10 years ago that as the economy grew, that the statistics would become more reliable. But that's actually turned around. And now statistics are going away and becoming less reliable. So I think, when there's a good story to tell, then you see statistics. But when the story is bad, then they take the statistics away.
And I'm just checking, Anne, because here we've come to this moment before. And I believe what you've said is that Xi Jinping regards control far more valuable than prosperity. Is that still true for the Chinese people?
I think that's true, John. I mean, I think all political systems ultimately are about the political leadership staying in power. But the number of people who keep that political leadership in power in China is far smaller than the number of people in most other nations. So it's become, a very small autocracy.
Anne Stephenson Yang, the author most recently of Wild Ride, the story of the rise and fall of the Chinese miracle. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.